closing prices on a lot of our deals have varied considerably as a result of this. How do you take into account these very dramatic swings in the economic environment accordingly in prices for art when you make a single point appraisal for a work of art?
When you appraise a work of art, how do you judge? How do you adjust for inflation and the swings?
Shall I answer that?
Class, yes.
We are making appraisals on a given date, and if we make appraisals for gift purposes, they are always as of a specific date. And we are asked, and we give our opinion only as to the value that we think this work of art has or had on that given date, no other date. It goes up and down, yes.
Mr. Colin has
That's what the law requires. The law requires, in the case of a gift, that you value the work as of the date of the gift, and in the case of an estate, that you value it as of the date of the death of the decedent, so that you have a fixed date as of which you're working.
What about in the case of insurance appraisals?
What about the case of insurance what?
Appraisals.
What about the case of insurance appraisals? I suppose you mean insofar as they would differ from these IRS appraisals?
Insurance appraisals...
Well, the date would answer that, wouldn't it?
No. An insurance appraisal is, in effect, an appraisal for replacement. And a replacement value appraisal is, at least when I give them, generally somewhat higher than the fair market value on that given date. Because you must take into account that if something happens to that artwork and the person who owns it goes out and wants to replace it, that he may have to pay a premium to replace that particular kind of thing. So there are the insurance, I always consider that the insurance values of paintings should be somewhat above the fair market value.
Next question. Second row.
I think that the emphasis of the discussion so far is, to my mind, and possibly for many other people here, a little bit misplaced by focusing so much on gift valuations and estate valuations. I think that for myself and probably many other people here, the interest is rather in terms of buying a painting and possibly reselling a painting as a consumer. How do you know to protect? How do you know whether you're paying too much?
Question is, how does the consumer going into a gallery know if he's being given a fair price? Fair enough? Yes.
How do you know that you couldn't just get it for half as much?
As a consumer, you do not buy with the idea of resale. And that is a very special point. I went into that when I started talking to begin with, to say that when I buy something for resale, I look at it and I look at its price very differently.
I don't think that's what he means, Klaus. I think what he means is, if a man without any special knowledge likes a painting and goes into a shop and says, I'd like to buy that, how does he know that the man giving him a price is being honest and fair?
May I answer that?
All right.
There's only one answer to that, and that is deal with responsible dealers.
And the second answer is to educate yourself by following art prices and markets, both public and private.
How do you know if you go into Tiffany's and to buy a diamond that you're not being cheated? Tiffany's has built up a reputation over many, many years, and many people trust them. The same is true of an art dealer. You should only deal with responsible dealers. And you can find out very easily who the responsible dealers are. They have a reputation just as Tiffany has. You can find out from your local museums. You can find out from other collectors. You can find out from other dealers whom you have faith in and have dealt with. There are a number of ways to find out who the responsible people are.
Ralph raises another important point, I think. More recently, museums have been very helpful. Curators have been very helpful in their own communities in advising people who take an interest in the museum and in supporting it. They won't guarantee necessarily everything, but they can help to point you in the right direction and give you some advice.
Gerald, did you have something?
Yes, thank you. I think that the questioner made a fallacy in his statement in saying, how do I know I can't buy the same thing at a half price somewhere else. We are.
How do you know you can't buy that painting in the same gallery for half as much?
Well, in the same gallery, yes.
How could you buy the same painting in the same gallery?
We're never offended by an offer. We may say no. But to continue the thought that doesn't seem to have been the question is, I mean, I often get the question, well, the same thing sold at the auction house for half the price. And I always have to explain that it's not the same thing. There is a difference. Years ago, I noticed that every run-of-the-mill painting by Monet would bring $40,000. Yet some were selling for hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars. You paid $40,000 for the signature, and the rest was the quality in the works of art. And as Robin said, you have to get to know the field. My wife and I collect photographs, and a few weeks ago we went to a photo fair and were offered a photograph by Emmanuel Sujet, 1927. And the price was given to us as $2,500, and it seemed all right. Nothing seemed wrong with it. We paid the price, went home and started talking about our other photograph by the same artist, and realized laughingly that we paid $500 for the last one. But that had been a number of years ago, and it didn't upset us at all. This was a picture we wanted, that we decided in our own minds what the value was. We're not worried about being cheated. We also went to a reputable dealer.
Any questions over here? In the back, yes.
Thank you. To what degree do you feel the auction market affects your idea individually of fair market value?
To what degree does the auction market affect the fair market value and their own and your own opinion of that?
Do you want me to answer that? Go ahead.
Yes.
You take it.
If an artist is sold quite frequently at auction, and say we were talking about recent paintings by Utrillo, of which there are a lot, and they often get sold at auction, or little Renoir paintings that are not particularly important. If they are sold frequently enough, then it's like on the stock exchange, there is a certain quote of bid and ask arrived at through the auction results, and you can be pretty confident that that is the value of such a painting. But this only goes for those things that exist in rather large quantities. If it comes to a special and especially a very fine work of art, the auction sale will not establish a firm market, either on the upside or on the low side. There are these auction estimates, the valuations which auction houses themselves put on the things that they are about to sell, and they have a range. There is the low estimate and the high estimate. And these estimates are usually arrived at by the reserve price that the auction house was forced to accept from the consignor. What I mean by that is, a man brings in a painting to an auction house and says, I'm willing to let you sell it, but I will not accept less than $100,000 for it. As a result of that, the auction house will say, well, the low estimate of this is about $90,000 and the high is about $120,000, and the reserve sits somewhere in between. The auction house is not allowed to give a high estimate that is lower than the reserve price, and they don't. Now, however, this $100,000 painting is offered at the auction sale, and the auctioneer knows that he cannot sell it under $100,000 to anyone but the consignor, meaning buy it in. If after arriving at, say, $50,000, there are no further bids from the audience, the auctioneer is very tempted to go on bidding for the reserve so that at least the knockdown price will be somewhat more favorably close to the reserve. This is not legal. Auction houses will say that they don't do it. I have no proof that they do it. It is, however, quite apparent that sometimes the auction bids from the audience are not very apparent.
Is that what you call taking a bid from the chandelier?
That's what it's called, yes, in the trade.
Yes.
Now, when a painting with a reserve price of 100,000 is bought in, I'd say 80 or 90,000, it doesn't for 1 minute mean that this picture is worth 80 or 90,000. It may really only be worth 30,000. But the competition between the auction houses is so great, and the competition to get good merchandise consigned for sale is so great that the auction houses must give the highest possible imaginable reserve price to the consignor. And that is why very often the auction prices seem very much higher than the prices in the art, private art galleries. They aren't necessarily, because they aren't really sales. As a result of some action by the Art Dealers Association, the auction houses no longer print on their auction results the results of lots that are bought in. They are simply left out. They used to print the knockdown prices of all numbers offered for sale, whether or not they were actually sold, which of course was to the public very misleading. They don't do it anymore. Yet during the auction sale itself, and unless you wait the time it takes to print up the auction results, during the auction sale you have very seldom a way of knowing that something that you think was sold for a lot of money wasn't really sold at all. To wit, the recent sale of the Turner painting, which everybody thought had been sold for over $1,700,000 and then turned out not to have been sold at all. Now, what is that painting worth? You guess.
In the back, yes. Okay, if no one challenges you. How does the IRS view auction values as against fair market values? Mr. Kohler.
That has been one of our troubles in dealing with the IRS. The IRS takes auction prices more seriously than I think true experts will, for a number of reasons. You can have two Matisse paintings, both made in 1928, both 24 by 30 inches. One can really be worth twice as much as the other on the basis of connoisseurship. One is a better painting than another, and one can bring twice as much money. But when we sometimes have conflicts with the IRS and they cite an auction record showing that Matisse was sold for $450,000, we point out, yes, but the one before us is only worth half as much. This is a very difficult thing to establish, but we have to establish it on the basis of expertise, coming back to expertise.
Yes, sir.
If one makes a gift to one's child of a moderately priced painting, not a seven-figure painting, let's say a $25,000-$50,000 painting, is the IRS going to insist on an appraisal accompanying the gift tax, or will they generally accept a value put on by the parent?
I have to rephrase it. If a parent gives a modestly priced painting to his child, does the IRS insist on an appraisal?
It is my understanding that there is no necessity to submit a tax appraisal with your tax return from a legal standpoint. But let me tell you that any information that you can give to the IRS to substantiate the value you're putting on the work of art can be very helpful. And if you have the dealer, if it handles the artist whose work you're giving, do an appraisal, assuming he didn't sell you the work 3 weeks before. This can be very helpful to the IRS and to yourself. In other words, give them as much information as you possibly can.
I'd like to add a question to that. Let's say you bought the painting for $500, and if you were to sell it now, it would bring $50,000. You're just lucky. And you give that to your child. Can you give it at $500?
No. You give it at the value of the date of the gift.
Then you have to have it appraised.
Well, you have to have it appraised if you want to submit evidence in support of your valuation. But as Jerry has just pointed out, you can first submit your tax return without the appraisal. If it's questioned, you're probably going to have to get an appraisal to support what you've done.
Let your conscience be your guide.
Yes. But the valuation is as of the date of the gift.
Next question. Yes, sir. I'm sorry. You've had one and there was someone behind you. I'll get back to you if I can. Yes, sir.
How do dealers establish the value of works of art by new arts? People who are having their first exhibitions. Are there any guidelines?
That's a good question for Robin, and I was going to add to it. How does a dealer establish the price value of a new artist? And I would add to that, how does a young unknown become a classic?
The first part's easier. If you deal in contemporary paintings and sculpture, you should have some feel for what type of prices are reasonable for young, new talent. You know to a certain extent what the market will bear, what collectors are used to paying, what, depending on the scale and the medium of the work, what is appropriate. Hopefully, you're showing this artist because you feel he has merit and has a future. Prices are generally determined using that background, and generally each gallery operates separately. There are certainly no hard and fast rules. There are not even any hard and fast rules to the way commissions are paid in percentages and so forth. But they're generally by agreement. And the objective is to price things where they will be attractive, and yet they won't be so inexpensive that they don't seem to have any value. It's a negotiated basis usually, and it's based on the hope that there will be sales generated on which to begin to build a career, to begin to have the artist's work exposed in private collections and in museums. And it builds from that point.
You don't want to answer the second part?
The second part, if everything goes as one hopes, if the artist is accepted by collectors, by critics, by museum people, as having merit, if he's given a series of exhibitions in his own gallery, and then perhaps in other galleries in other regions, perhaps in group shows in museums, perhaps later one-man exhibitions in museums, this builds a base, a credibility, an exposure. This sometimes is based more on ability and sometimes more on salesmanship. It depends on who's doing it and how it's done. But those are the elements that go into it.
Thank you. We've got 15 more minutes and you're next.
If I go into a gallery that's a member of the ADA, how can I find out if that specific gallery is perhaps, well, let's say, operating on the ethical fringes of the ADA standards? Since I'm sure perhaps not all of the members of the ADA are all saints.
Yes, the question is, how does one know when going even into an ADA shop that you're dealing with superior and honorable men?
Can I contact the ADA itself?
Well, I would hesitate to claim that all of our members or anyone else I know is a saint. But the rules for our membership are such that we think we have only responsible people. We have no procedure for application for membership. Members must be invited to join by the board of directors, and the invitations are issued on the basis of the reputation of the gallery as it's built up. There are three basic requirements. The gallery has to be in existence for at least 5 years. Second, it must have a good reputation in its community with museums, artists, collectors, and others. And third, it must have a reputation for making contribution to the cultural life of the community. In other words, we, while being just a picture dealer is a perfectly reputable business, we try to not have simply picture dealers, but what we prefer to call art dealers. Now, we have about 108 members across the United States at the present time. We think that all of those 108 are reputable, honest, knowledgeable, and that you can safely deal with them. If you want a list of those members, you can write to us, and we have a handbook which we distribute.
Why did the ADA come into business?
Well, the immediate cause was the one I mentioned in my opening statement, that there was a threat to eliminate the gifts, the deductibility of gifts to museums, and that would have put practically all the museums in the United States out of business, because 95% of the acquisitions by museums throughout the United States is by gifts and legacies. Very few museums, the Cleveland is the great outstanding exception, have sizable acquisition funds. And one of the main reasons for our creating the association was to provide a competent appraisal system which would eliminate that possibility of...
Gerald?
I'd just like to give a further answer to the question over here. Finding a professional in any area is a very difficult chore. If you've ever looked for a doctor or for a lawyer, and I think you find a reputable art dealer in the same way. You ask collectors that you know, you ask at the local museum, and you ask for directories such as the one that Ralph suggested. But collecting art is not something you just do sitting in your living room. You have to go out and do your homework, too.
Well, this leads to another question. I'll bet someone else is going to ask it, but I'll ask it anyway. How, if you're not dealing with IRS matters, you must go out and find an appraiser yourself. What is an appraiser? Who is qualified to be an appraiser? And how do you know if you're dealing with a good appraiser? Is there an appraiser's school? What?
There are appraisers' associations. As I said in my opening statement, I personally have considerable question about the expertness of an appraiser who will undertake to appraise anything from the beginning of the world to date. I think that you have to find out about experts, as Jerry says, the way you find out about other things. You know that you can go to 47th Street between 5th and 6th Avenue and buy a diamond of a certain size for about half what you'd have to pay at Tiffany's. The problem is it the same diamond? Is it the similar diamond? You go to Tiffany's because you trust their judgment in selling diamonds. You have to find an appraiser or an art dealer in the same way. You have to find someone with a reputation.
What about this ad you cut out of the Times that I saw?
Well, I was going to read to you in contrast to the requirements we have for an expert, an advertisement which appeared in the Sunday Times. And it reads, "Tell appraise your art. Our appraisers will give you the value of your paintings and prints over the telephone using computerized art prices. $20 per evaluation, $10 if no pricing data is found. MasterCard and Visa accepted." Now, I assume that this company has fed into a computer all of the auction prices that they've been able to gather, and that when you call up and ask the price of that Matisse that I was talking about before, the 1928 Matisse 24 by 30, they will find that a Matisse 24 by 30, painted in 1928, was sold at Sotheby Park Burnett 2 years ago for $250,000. Whether that painting bears any relation whatsoever to the quality of the one you have, of course they don't know, and their computer doesn't know. And this is, to my mind, laughable.
And the audiences.
To take that to the ultimate extreme, any one of you can do an appraisal. The question is, there's nothing to say you can't. The question is, would it be competent and could it be supported if it were challenged? And that's the difference.
Yes, sir. Robin made the comment that salesmanship sometimes helps in the establishment of a career and a reputation. Now, you want him to elaborate on that?
Well, I don't think it's any secret that many contemporary galleries, and especially in the period of the 60s and the 70s, the dealers themselves and the publicity and the so-called hype that was involved had as much to do with the growth of some careers as perhaps the merit of the work. In some cases, people sell very wonderful work, and they also use a great deal of publicity. And try and expose the work as broadly as possible. In some cases, the work is not any good, and it's sold primarily through hype. This, again, is something you have to educate yourself on and make your own decision to a certain extent.
Which type of hype is more and less influential?
Maybe if I had done it, I'd know. Maybe if I had practiced it, I would know. I don't know.
That's a very good answer. Well, now we haven't had a question from this side. Yes, sir. And you're next. Why do experts place so much emphasis on the size of an artwork in determining its value, Klaus?
One reason for that is that in the country of France, where a lot of the paintings were made over the hundreds of years, there used to be a very specific system, and that is that paintings from the artist's studios were sold by the point. An artist got a certain amount of money for a point, and practically all, the paintings that were painted in France were painted on stretchers which went along the points. A 10-point canvas was 18.5 by 21 inches and still is. A 20-point canvas is 23.5 by 28.5 inches and it still is. The artist got 20 times his unit point price for a size 20 painting, and he only got 10 times his point price for a size 10 painting. Since France was culturally very important in the 18th and 19th centuries, and in the early 20th century, this is a leftover from the French tradition, that generally today, larger paintings sell for more than smaller paintings, although in the case of many artists we all know, some of the smaller paintings are really much better than the larger ones.
Yes, ma'am.
How important, or what is the significance of a signature or lack of signature on a contemporary painting?
On a contemporary painting, how important is the signature or its absence?
I think it depends a lot on how much other backup there is to signature is usually used as part of the establishment of authenticity. It's also a relatively one of the easier parts of a painting to forge. If a painter always signed his paintings and one isn't signed, it hurts.
What about those Monets where they're stamped in the bottom?
Well, you're talking about an estate stamp. Yeah. That's quite a different question, and that would go more to the addressing record keeping, provenance and records of where it has been and so forth. All things being equal, it's more desirable to have a signature on a painting if the artist normally signed. But if the painting has an impeccable provenance and history, and if it is very typical of the work and unquestioned, and if the artist was known not to sign occasionally, it doesn't make any significant difference.
Sometimes there are reasons why paintings are signed or not signed. For instance, Picasso used to sign paintings after he sold them. As long as they were unsold, they remained in his studio unsigned. He used that as a protection against thievery. As a result of that, the paintings which are now being sold by the estate are not signed, and they are furnished with an estate number and authenticity certificate. But there are, in other cases, for instance, a man like Modigliani very seldom signs his drawings. If you see a Modigliani drawing that is not signed, it is much more likely to be genuine than one that is signed.
We have time for one more question. Yes, ma'am. How does fashion, how does fashion govern price?
Well, fashion is one element in fixing value. If a painting is out of fashion, if an artist is out of fashion, there will presumably at that time be a very weak or no market whatsoever. And that's a factor that experts are aware of. And when you're trying, I emphasized at the beginning of my statement that what we're talking about here is market value, not aesthetic value. And if an artist is out of fashion, he presumably has a weak or little market value. That's just one of the factors.
Yes, sir. The value, the state of the economy as it relates to the value of a work of art.
I can answer that.
I'd like to ask, I'd like to add a specific question to that. We read of the near bankruptcy of the state of Mexico and the peculiar position of the Mexican painters in America. Would you comment on all that?
Yes. The fact of the general economic situation all over the world has resulted in a great diminution of the sale of the things that are not very expensive. Peculiarly, the things that are very expensive are still bringing higher and higher record prices, apparently for the reason that those people who are, to begin with, able to buy these very expensive things seem not to suffer from the general kind of economic slowdown. When it comes to the Mexican question, it is this is one of the things that I alluded to before, that things that happen internally in another country can affect the market of art in our country. And in Mexico, now that people no longer are able to exchange their pesos for dollars, means that they cannot come and buy Mexican art at the auction sales of Latin American art or in private galleries in New York. And as a result of that, the large percentage of the market has been very suddenly shut off.
Klaus, isn't there one other factor in the high-priced field? And that is not only that the wealthy seem always to have money to buy, but the fact that the most expensive paintings, the most desirable ones, are the ones that can't be replaced so easily. You have to buy them when they appear in the market, whereas when you're dealing with a moderate or less expensive work, you can always put off the purchase on the theory that another one will come along.
Yes, but it seems to me that the real point here is that there seems no limit to the rise in value, the continuous rise in value of the things that start out by costing $1 million a piece. Once they get to that point, then all of a sudden they can cost 2 or 3 or 10 million and they will still go up. And I have really no explanation for that.
I think that's the place to end, where we have no explanation.